We're all set?
Yes.
All right. You know, I guess there's only one way to start this, and that's by telling you my name is Chuck. You know, if you try to find Chuck M in the Akron area, you're going to find about 2 million of them. You know, so when I'm at a meeting and or any place, I'm not afraid to use my last name, because anybody that knew Chuck Moff knew he was a drunk. It's that simple. You know, I am not ashamed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And anybody asks me, I'm glad to tell them. I only know one way to do this, and that's just get started. The big book tells us to tell a little bit about how it was, you know, what it was like back then, what happened, and what it's like today. And most of it can sum it up real quick. You know, it was hell. it was. There's no two ways about it. It was terrible, you know, and I couldn't get out of it, you know. And then I found my way to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they saved my life, you know. My sobriety date is November the 8th of 1988. That is not my first sobriety date, so I'll get into that as we go on. But that really should only be important to me, okay? Because we have a day-to-day reprieve from alcoholism by asking God to help us every day. And I do that. I still do it today. I don't do it on my knees anymore because it's too hard to get back up. But, you know, I do. I thank him every night. You know, I do. Because I don't know what I would have done without this program. I know what I've done. I'd be dead. If nothing else, my wife would have killed me. You know? There's no two ways about it. I'm a member of a quite large family. I'm one of 10 children, and I'm born and raised. I live about 25 miles from Youngstown, Ohio, and 25 miles from Akron, Ohio, right in the middle. And I spent most of my life in that area, or back and forth from that area a lot, you know. As I said, I was one of 10 children and raised on a small dairy farm there in Portage County in Ohio, and I had a great childhood, you know. I heard people say, you know, I had a terrible childhood and had this, that, and the other. I didn't. I had a good childhood, you know. We didn't have money, but, you know, we get done with our work, you know. I had acres and acres of what to do, whatever I wanted to do, you know. And I really loved it, you know. I really loved the way I grew up. And I tried to give my own sons that as they come along. You know, the feeling of being on the farm and raising things and, you know, growing up that way. But alcohol played a rough part there, too, okay? Now, I graduated high school in 1962, in May. Went to work right off the bat in the factories. Small rubber shop there in Ravenna, Ohio. And life was good, you know. I was 17 years old when I graduated high school. I was 17 years old and I was working in the shop. Working midnights. That's against the law, but I was doing it, you know. And everything was good, you know. But as I was working midnights, and we get off midnight shift, and, you know, what do you do on Friday when you get off midnight shift? Right? You cash your paycheck at the bar, right? I'm 17 years old. I walk into this bar at a little after 7 on a Friday morning to cash my paycheck and have a beer. It was just no big deal, you know. And they actually served me, you know. I mean, I'm supposed to be 21 to walk through the door, let alone do anything else, you know. But the insanity part followed. later on. I got married in November of 62, and you know, my wife, I'd known her for a long time. Our families were neighbors, and her and I kind of grew up together, you know. And then when we started dating, and roller skating and doing all that kid stuff, you know, having a great time. You know, as a young man, I was really had all kinds of freedom as long as I had my work done. You know, that's all my dad cared. But if he was doing something outside, you know, I was there with him, along with the rest of the kids, the other boys, you know, because I was one of six boys. And now there's only two of us left in the family. And, you know, but it was great. I just can't say enough. I wish I could relive the childhood. But, of course, we can't do that, you know. Anyhow, I got married in November of 1962, and our first son was born in November of 1964. My second son was born in October of 67, and our third son was born in February of 72. And now I'm the grandfather of eight, and I'm the great-grandfather of three. And I'm 70 years old now. I feel like about 95, but I'm 70. As I say, early on things were good. They really were. You know, I was working in the shop, and my wife and we had a little three-bedroom apartment. My rent was $95 a month, and that included the heat and the electric. You know, we had plenty of money, all kinds of money, you know. I went out and bought a brand new car in 1963, you know. You know, and my wife was expecting, so we bought a four-door. You know, ain't that crazy? You know, we knew he was going to have a family, so I bought a Ford. You know, I didn't buy no flashy thing, you know. But still, I remember back in those days, I paid $2,600 for that car. Brand new Chevy Impala, you know. What do you think I got to get for that kind of money today? Not much, I tell you. But anyhow, you know, it was great. You know, we did anything we wanted to do. Then we bought a boat, you know. And I used to love to fish all the time. So you got to have a boat. So we bought a boat. And, you know, it was nice. It was good. You know, drank a little with friends, a few beers here and there. And basically, I'm a beer drinker, but I would drink about anything. I really did like moonshine. It didn't like me, but I liked it. And anyhow, we, you know, just our lives started going. And I changed jobs from working in the rubber companies, the shops there, and I went to work back then in about 66 on the building the interstate highways, you know, heavy and highway road construction. And so I was working outside as a laborer, you know, and I loved it, you know, I did. My kind of works outside. So things were going pretty good, you know. Then the gentleman that owned the company was wanting to clear a place in Ravenna, Ohio, to build a golf course. And so I was up there helping to clear trees. And we had a big old beech tree down, and I was cutting the limbs off, and my buddy was cutting the stumps. And I heard something go crack, and I said, well, this is no place for me. So I went to step back, and just as I did, one limb caught me across the face and busted my nose, blacked my eyes, loosened all my teeth. You know, it really whacked me one. And then another one hit me behind the neck and flipped me upside down. Down I went, buried my elbows in the mud, and a chainsaw flew. And I didn't think I was hurt, you know. Just a broken nose, not a big deal, you know. I washed off, went back to work, and a couple hours later, the crane broke down. So the operator's working on the crane. I'm standing by the catwalk to help him. He asked me for a wrench. It was right at his knees. Now, you know, a catwalk's fairly high. It was probably about right here, you know. And I couldn't see that wrench. I had to step back to look to find that wrench, you know. And he looked at me, and by then my head's cocked back, you know. And he said, "I think you better go to the hospital." And I said, "I think you're right." So I did. And I had a broken neck, you know. And here I am working 2 hours after I did it. You know, it's the one I didn't paralyze myself. But nothing separated, so, you know, everything went along pretty good. The reason I mention that is because my alcohol up until that time was nothing, really. I mean, you know, a few beers now and then. Nothing to really speak of. But from 1967 to 1972, I became a full-blown periodic alcoholic. I got to where if I would stop and drink, now I did most of my drinking at a bar. If I would stop and have a beer, I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to get home that night or not, or if I was going to end up in my second home, the jail, you know, with them pretty little silver bracelets on you, you know. Been there many, many times, and I'm not proud of that. You know, that's terrible. You know, it's terrible. As time went on, though, I, as I said, by 1972, I really got bad, and a very dear friend of mine, her father was one of the first 100 in this program, and you know, she saw what I was doing, and she told me, she said, "You know, you really should think about going to AA, you know." And her dad's name was Lons Everett. He was from Stowe, Ohio. And he was one of the first 100 in AA. And anyhow, I said, "Oh, I'm not that bad." "How bad do you have to be, you know?" "I don't, you know, who's got a gauge, you know, do you, I don't know, some kind of magic gauge, I guess." He said, "Hey, you're a drunk." "Yeah, no kidding, yeah." Anyhow, I went on, as I say, eventually then my father-in-law set up with some friends of his who were in AA to have me go to a meeting. Now there again, the gentleman that set it up was one of the first 100 in the program. And anyhow, he used to introduce themselves as card-carrying members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were proud of that. You know, and I don't blame him, you know, I really don't. Anyhow, he got me there in August of 72. He had called two other gentlemen, and they came and picked my wife and I up, and we went to our very first AA meeting. And I'm so glad she was still with me, you know. I'm surprised she didn't kick me out a long time before that, because I was terrible. If I was drinking, I was mean, I was nasty, you know. It was bad. It was bad. I don't know what else you can say, you know, other than the fact it was hell. So I went to my first AA meeting in Randolph, Ohio. And that Saturday night meeting is one of the older meetings around. And when I walked in there, you know, it felt like I was where I belonged, you know. Because, you know, the people were just like me, and the spouses were just like my wife, nervous and scared, you know. And I can't say enough about the people. You know? And today, I can still name you around 90% of the people that were at that meeting, because there weren't very many meetings around. We would all be at the same place at the same time. You know, Saturday night we had Randolph. You know, Sunday night we had Garrettsville or Alliance. You know, Monday night we had Streetsboro or Hartville. Okay. Tuesday night was Ravenna. That was it. Wednesday night was Manaway. That was it. Thursday night, you know, actually, It was clear over to Newton Falls, way over. You know, it's just crazy. Friday was Kent. And we were all at the same meetings because that's all that was there to go to. That was it, you know. Today there must be 10,000 meetings up there around. You know, they're just, every night you have 5 and 6 meetings you can go to, you know. And anyhow, I went to that first meeting. And the gentleman that led was to become my sponsor. I talked to him after he spoke, and he's just a great guy. And I could relate to him right down the line. He was periodic, you know, a binge drinker like me, except his was a little bit longer than mine. You know, he'd go and get lost for a couple of weeks, and I'd go and get lost for a couple of days, you know. But he was just a great guy, a great man, you know. He gave me my first copy of the Big Book. He also gave me the little 24-hour book, you know. And he said, read out of this every day and read out of that Big Book every day. And he said, call me so we can go to meetings, you know. So I did, you know, I did. I made it for 11 months. And I don't know why. Yeah, who knows why? Big deal. Why? You know, who cares why? You know, because like some dummy, I drank. You know, I picked up a beer. I was going to have one beer, a beer. I don't have to tell you all where that ended up. You know, I was back in my favorite place and they locked the door behind me, you know. And my poor wife came and bailed me out. I wouldn't have blamed her if she'd left me in there, you know. By that time, I'm not even sure how many DUIs, DWIs, whatever you want to call them, that I had by that time. I know that by the end of my drinking, I had over 7 of them. And that's insanity. That's insanity. Why? Why would you keep doing that? But I did, all right. I did 11 months. Bang, turned right around, right back into the program. I knew I had to be back in the program, you know. So many of the old-timers helped me. And, you know, I got to know a lot of the old-timers. Going to Akron a lot, you know, just because it was quite a drive to get to Akron and make a meeting and then get back home and then get to work, you know. It was rough that way. But I went to a lot of meetings in the Akron area eventually. You know, the old one, the King School, St. Vincent's, and you know, I've been to Dr. Bob's house many times. And I've been to the Cyberling Estates many times. But just that alone won't keep you sober. It won't do it. You have to do what you need to do every day. And I did eventually go into the shop. I was working for Massey Ferguson up in Akron, Ohio. And then they closed that shop. And I just built a brand new house, my wife and I and my 3 boys. Massey, in their infinite wisdom, said if we went to Des Moines, Iowa with them, we could keep a job. I'll tell you, that was a good job back there in 78, and I didn't want to lose it, you know. I wasn't going to lose it over my drinking at all, you know, but they were going to move, and there was nothing I could do about that. So we went to Des Moines, Iowa with them, and one of the problems with that is I took Chuck with me. I got out there, and there was even fewer meetings out there than there was around where I lived in Ohio, you know. It just, oh my goodness, you know, I'm in the closest meeting to where I lived with like 35 miles. And so here I am, I'm 35 miles south of Des Moines, where we work. And I had to go back and forth, you know. It was just nuts, you know. I loved it out there though, I'll tell you, I loved it out there. But then Massey turned around in their infinite wisdom again and they closed the doors out there. Oh, God. And I could not get a job out there, you know. And as I said, I took Chuck with me, so here I am. You know, I messed up out there, but just one night, one time, you know, went out, drank, got busted, you know. nothing new, you know. If I drink, I gotta drive. I don't know why. You know, I don't know, just, of course, that ain't gonna happen today, you know. No. I do have a set of car keys, but my car's in Ohio, you know. So I'm not gonna drive today. Anyhow, I got busted out there, and Massey closed their doors, so we moved back to Ohio. You know, I couldn't get a job out there. 2 days after I got back to Ohio, I went right to work. You know, I picked up a trade as a welder, and I picked up a trade as a mechanic at Massey Ferguson. So I went to work as a welder and a mechanic, you know. Always had good jobs. You know, why I went to Iowa in the first place, I have no idea, really. I could have stayed where we were at, and I'd had a brand new house and some 20 acres of land, and it would have been easy, but no, we got to go to Iowa. You know, oh, God. Anyhow, we got back and got back into the thing, swing of things, and, you know, moving back. Stay away from meetings. Don't go to meetings, Chuck. Stay sober, you know. Don't do that. You know. I didn't. I got drunk. Usual things, you know. But then it set up just before my last drunk. I had 4 years and 11 months when I was out that last time. And I was so ashamed of myself that I could have just, you know, drop-kicked myself right out the door. My wife, you know, she was just beside herself with it all. She knew she couldn't stop me, you know, and she knew that the love of the kids couldn't stop me, you know. It was terrible, you know, for all of us that last time, you know. I had made so many good friends, and after I got back, like I said, I hadn't gone to meetings until this last time before that. And I was going to meetings then. I mean, I was going to meetings. I was doing 4 meetings a week when I went out and drank. You know, insanity. I was just crazy. You know. You hear so many names and so many people from around the area up there, you know. And people tell you, well, the most quoted person in the Akron area was a fellow by the name of Mose Yoder. And he was a beautiful man. He truly was. And his wife was just, she was just great. She really was. She would take the women under her wing and work with them and show them, you know. And Al-Anon had got started, you know, that communist program for women. That didn't make my life any easier, I'm here to tell you right now. But she did, she knew then that, you know, that her hollering or whatever wasn't going to do any good. It just wasn't. You know. But we were doing really well for the 4 years and 11 months, you know. I was working good. Two of the boys were grown, you know. All I had was the youngest one at home. He was 16, you know. And, you know, there was no reason for that last drunk, except I wasn't thinking about staying sober that night. I really wasn't. I hadn't thought about drinking. I know I hadn't thought about drinking. But I hadn't thought about the other way either, about staying sober. And I stopped on my way home from work one night, that night, to visit with a friend of mine that owned a bar in Kent, just to see him. I hadn't seen him in that 4 years and 11 months, you know. You know, of course, they're not going to come around somebody sober either, you know, because he owned the bar. He sure wouldn't come around me. But I stopped to see him, you know, and then, you know, you start drinking Pepsis. Everybody tell you that's the wrong place to be when you're in the wrong frame of mind. And trust me, that's the wrong place to be when you're in the wrong frame of mind. And that's where I was. And in a matter of about 3 hours there, I was so drunk I couldn't hardly walk. But I could drive. you guessed it, yeah, you know. I had one of Bill Wilson's flashing lights before my eyes. Problem was, a state highway patrolman with a flashlight, you know. Not good, not good. He arrested me and took me to the patrol barracks. At least he didn't put me in jail this time. And just a great guy, you know, he took my truck and he parked, or my car rather, and parked it in the parking lot at the grocery store right close to where we were, you know. And no one had ever done that. No one. You know, they always had it towed. So, I mean, you got to pay the towing bill, you got a storage bill, you got, you know, all this stuff you got to pay, you know. But it was sitting there, you know. So the next day, my wife and my son went up and got my car and took it home. Made up my mind that night in that police barracks. I was sitting there in the back room, yeah, with my bracelets on, you know, sitting there. And I just made up my mind. I said, God help me, I can't do this anymore. I just can't. And I said, God help me, please. And you know, ever since that night, I've not had the urge to pick up a drink. He took it away because I asked him to. You know, I don't understand all this stuff, and I don't think anybody ever will, but I became so grateful, so very grateful. I started running meetings again, my wife and I, and doing what I was supposed to do. You know, it was hard for me to make a meeting every night, but I tried. I talked to my sponsor, the very same sponsor that I talked to the very first night I ever went to AA, back there in 72, never turned his back on me at all. You know, he said, you know, when you get sober, call me, you know. I did. And he still was my sponsor, you know. He stayed my sponsor till the time he died here about 5 years ago. I don't have a sponsor today. I don't need a sponsor today. You know, I got enough people around that I got all kinds of sponsors. I don't need just one, you know. And they kick my backside when I'm goofing up, you know. And you know, it's pretty good. Life today is well worth living. Although last year I didn't think so. In March of 2010, my wife got sick, and we didn't know why for sure. And they diagnosed her with diverticulitis, you know, which it wasn't. She had breast cancer, and by the time they found it, she was at stage 4. And it was a type of breast cancer that you can treat. And so it set up a thing of her and I and going for her chemo, because I was on total disability by then. I'd hurt my back so many daggone times, it was unreal. And, you know, I've had enough surgeries on my back to last a lifetime. But I thank God that today I can still walk, all right? There was a time when I couldn't walk because of my back. Anyhow, they found that she had stage 4 breast cancer, and so that set up a running for me. And I was going back and forth to meetings and back and forth with her for her chemo treatments and her radiation. She had 4 tumors on her back and on her spine. And of course they treated those, you know, and then they treated the cancer. And in September of 2014, the cancer doctor told her, well, for all practical purposes, you're cancer free, to my wife, you know. Oh, such a relief, you know. How wrong could he possibly be? October, my wife started having seizures. We didn't know why. Until they did an MRI, and they found out she had a brain tumor. from the same cancer that had put the tumors on her back. They treated it and was able to stop the seizures for a while. But then in just over New Year's, into 2014, and, you know, if I'm messing up the years, I apologize. It kind of runs together. But anyhow, in January 2014, she ended up bedridden. She couldn't get up because the seizures had come back. She couldn't do anything much, you know. So we were told to take her home and keep her comfortable. That's hard, you know. That's hard. I could still see just a little bit then. Glaucoma was a fault that I had lost my sight in my right eye. And the doctor operated on my left eye, and it was his fault I lost the sight in my left eye. But, you know, that's the way it goes. You know, that's just the way it goes. You know, that I could accept. See? That I could accept. I can accept being blind. You know, what I couldn't accept was her, you know, going through all this hell and still not being able to survive. You know, it's just, what do you do? You know, you tell me, what do you do? Yeah, you better believe it. You pray in the morning. And you thank him at night, you know. There were nights that I was not very grateful. But I still thanked him because I hadn't picked up a drink. And she died in May, you know. The doctor said she was going to die a terrible death. He said, the pain will be just unreal. It wasn't that way at all. Thank God. She died peacefully in her sleep. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. So anyway, as things go on and time goes on, you know, I've been able to let her rest in peace. And I found out that I can live with it. See? I found out I can live with being blind. You know, there were powers of example in AA. There were two mighty fine brothers from Akron, Ohio, by the name of Tom and Frank Keenan. And those two gentlemen were both blind because of drinking antifreeze that they had filtered through bread. Didn't work. Okay, it didn't work. They got drunk, all right. But the next day, they were both blind. And they found their way to meetings all over the country. You know, if they can do it, why can't I? Powers of example, you know. Look around you in this room. Powers of example, you know. People that know that in order to stay sober, you have to do what you have to do. Now, I'm a real alcoholic. Who cares? I'm sorry. You know, today it's just, it ain't going to happen that way, you know. I'm so happy to see the young people come into this program today that it's not funny. I was 27 when I went to my first AA meeting, okay? I was not 27 when I finally got sober, you know. It took 16 years of in and out of this program to get sober, to accept the fact that one little miserable stinking beer, one little sip of that miserable stinking little beer was going to get me drunk. But after I crossed that line, every time that I picked up a beer, I couldn't tell you where it was going to end up, you know. It usually ended up, like I said, with these pretty little silver bracelets and all that stuff, you know. But, you know, sometimes it didn't. But as a rule, it did. Now today, since I've been able to stay sober, I am sober for longer than I drank alcoholically. Okay? And that was from 1967. I am sober longer than I was a drunk. Thank God. You know, thank God. There's no two ways about it. Thank God. You know, thank the people that started this program. I used to go to Founders Day early on, you know, in Akron. Early on, though, it was just a couple hundred people, you know, then it was a couple thousand, you know. Then the next time you turn around, it was really big, you know. And that was no place for me, you know. I'm an old country boy. I don't need to be in there. And put this on here, son. I keep an eye on the time here. I don't want to.
Got all you want.
It is 8:46 p.m.
Yeah, we're getting there. I told the guys the other day, morning at the meeting, I said, make sure you got two cups of coffee, one to keep you awake, you know. I don't do this often, you know. But when I talk, it's been a hard year. You know, I've never had to put up with things like I have this year, you know, this past year. But, you know, I'm still sober. Still sober. Name of the game. The name of the game. Die sober. The name of the game. Help others. You know, help others. That's what, you know, that's what our traditions tell us, is to help others. That very first night that I asked that man to be my sponsor, he said, I'm only asked three things of you. You know, and I said, well, okay, fine, what's that? He said, first of all, stand up. Well, I understood what that meant, all right? You know, no more lying, you know, no more doing stupid stuff. I understood that. And clean up, inside and outside, okay? Well, I cleaned up good to go to the meeting and everything, but, you know, I still had a lot of trash on the inside that I had to get rid of, you know. You can't stay sober carrying trash around with you. It don't work. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. That's your fourth and fifth step. Get rid of it, you know. And you know, the very last thing is help others. I said, what am I supposed to do? He said, well, for right now, wash ashtrays. Great. Oh man, there was a bunch of ashtrays too, let me tell you. And I didn't even smoke. I honestly did get to smoking, though. I was a mess, you know. You ever walk into the shop and you're working, guys, and you work inside, and first thing you want is a cup of coffee and a cigarette. Jesus, you know, why? You know, I didn't even like coffee, you know. And I sure didn't like cigarettes, but I was smoking, you bet. And I was drinking coffee. Oh, yeah, sure was. You know, it's just, you know, the insanity goes everywhere with you. It doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It goes everywhere. I don't let the squirrel cage keep running, you know. When it gets started, I find something to stop it real quick because, you know, I can get just as crazy today sober as I did then drunk if I let myself do it, you know. And so I don't do it, you know. I don't. I have a lot of fun in this program. I have, you know. My wife and I went to conferences, you know. I didn't go to the big ones, but local ones. You know, dinners galore. You can tell that, you know. Lots of good food, you know. And, you know, I loved AA. I loved it. Why couldn't I stay sober? I couldn't accept. Couldn't accept it, okay? I finally got the pamphlet on acceptance, and then I started to do what it suggested that I do. And I learned how to do it, you know. I knew the steps. I had worked them. I knew what it took to stay sober. I didn't work that, see? I didn't work that. This is a simple program, and I love to keep my program just as simple as I can because I can't afford to louse it up. You know, if I got something going wrong somewhere, I hope somebody tells me because I need to do something to change it, you know. I'd been going, my wife and I, after I retired, we're going back and forth to down by Port Charlotte. We had a little place down Punta Gorda. And we had a little place up in Andover, Ohio, which is up towards Erie, and Ashtabula County in Ohio. And my home group was up there, you know, at that time. Then things changed, you know, when I lost my sight. My wife wouldn't drive that far. And forget it, dang, it happened. My wife wouldn't even get a driver's license till she turned 50 years old. And that's when I got disabled, see? Because she knew that eventually she was going to have to drive. And she did. She did. I give her all the credit in the world, you know. All the credit in the world. I just give it to her, you know. I had still drove when I got hurt, after I got hurt and I was disabled and everything. But, you know, when I lost these, it was all over. Just all over, you know. And she stepped right up. See? She stepped right up. This happened in 07. 09, I had a quadruple bypass. You know, she stepped right up. She was right there with me the whole time. No problem. You know. When she got her cancer, I was there with her. You know, just that simple. She and I had 51 years together. And I'm grateful. See, I'm grateful. I beg God to let it be me, not her. We don't control those things. We don't. Have no control. And I'm just grateful that she went like she did. A lot of the people that I've met since I've been down here this last month, you know, knew a little bit of my story. They knew a little bit about what happened, you know. But I tell you, it was hell. But I've been through hell before, see. She hadn't, I had, you know. She was my world, and I admit it, you know. And still pretty lost without her, but I'm here, see, I'm here. I came down to visit my brother who lives in Inverness, just south of town, and I picked up the phone. I called a friend of mine down at Port Charlotte, and I said, boy, how am I going to find a meeting up here, you know? And they said, don't worry about it, we'll find somebody to come and get you, you know. So I get a phone call from the lady from Sarasota. Oh, no. And I, well, you know, you're about 120 miles from me, you know. Oh, my, she said, okay, well, you're up there, you know, by Zephyr Hills. I know, a little farther than that, you know. But she called someone in, I believe, Zephyr Hills, by the name of Steve. Then that Steve called me. And I told him, I said, you know, you're a long ways away from me, you know. And he said, well, let me make another phone call, and I'll get back to you. Okay. So about a half hour later, I get another phone call. Okay, and this Steve is from Hernando. I said, well, you're just up the road, you know. Just, you know, that's no big deal there, you know. And he says, okay. He says, great. He said, now, where do you actually live? I said, south of Inverness, you know, on 44, off of 41. Don't worry, he says, I got somebody in mind. I'm going to give him a call. Poor guy, he called me. Yeah. Yeah, no, John called, you know. And I'm grateful. See, I'm grateful. John goes to a lot of meetings, and I needed it. See, I needed it bad. You know, you can't just sit around. Get out. Get active. If you're new in this program, for God's sake, do anything that you can to volunteer to help. And that way you'll stay sober. Okay? Yeah. John didn't know what he was getting into when he got a hold of me. He found out. I love to have fun in this program. But I take it dead serious, too. The friend that I called in Port Charlotte, they snowboarded with us. They live up in Northeast Ohio, too. And he and I went to a lot of meetings together. A lot of meetings together. And I want to just tell you this story about him. We were in western Pennsylvania to a meeting one night. And Bill was going to lead, you know, speak. And I got to read how it works. Boy, that was a mistake for Bill, you know. I got up there to read how it works, you know, and I got that part about there are those two suffering grave emotional and mental disorders. And I said, your lead tonight is a prime example of that. I knew I'd pay for that, you know. Because we kind of, we do a lot of stuff at other people's expense. Let's put it that way. And so about a month later, we're going to our home group meeting, and I asked, he's chairing, right? I said, Bill, who's leading tonight? I got it covered. Don't worry about it. I get to the meeting, we're setting it up, making coffee and this, that, and the other. I said, Bill, who is leading tonight? Don't worry about it. He says, I got it covered, So we're going through this whole thing, and get everything, all the readings and everything, I'm sitting there, and Bill's up there chairing. And he said, the lead tonight is Chuck Moff. I said, wait a minute. When did I volunteer to lead? He said, just now. Yeah, I knew I'd pay for it. See? I have fun today. I have fun. When I was going down in Port Charlotte, there was a retired lieutenant colonel from the Army. That poor guy. I'm telling you, we had more fun with him than a barrel of monkeys. We really did. Kidding about, what do you mean military intelligence? That's an oxymoron, ain't it? A little laugh. See? The old timers taught me that. They said, I'm allowed to have a little bit of fun today, and I still do. Sometimes it's hard, but I still do it. The most quoted man from the Akron area was Mose Yoder. He really is, still today. He's been gone since 1985, roughly, 1985. I don't remember the exact date he passed away. But he is the most quoted man in the area. He would pick up the 24-hour book and tell you exactly what page it is that he's quoting you to you from. And he knew it. I did not memorize any of that. I didn't. Because I didn't want to. I wanted to be able to have to read it. that's a mistake. A good friend of mine up there, she's just a wee little gal. Just a wee little thing. I mean, she can't weigh 100 pounds, And she's a farrier, for crying out loud. She shoes horses. And I pick on her all the time, Anyway, she said, why don't you go learn Braille? I said, I'm 70 years old. I'm not going to go learn Braille. Guess what she called me? Dumbass. That's the way it is, see? My friends, they love me. They're not afraid to tell me the way it is, see? I enjoy life today. And I hope to enjoy life tomorrow. And you know what? I won't worry about it until tomorrow. See? Then I'm done. All right. Thank you.